This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be, of course, talking about family law and the term manimony, and that is very simply spousal support for husbands. My guests are Stephen Rubin, a member of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. He's a specialist in family law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and has law offices in San Francisco. My other guest is Marlis Bruns, a private vocational evaluator. She's a partner in the vocational consulting firm of Stevenson and Bruns in San Ramon. She's a court expert, has testified in court, and is the co-author of the Standards of Practice for Vocational Evaluations in California Family Law. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Trusts and Estates Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Marlis and Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chuck.
Very nice to have you here. This is Your Legal Rights 25th year on public radio, and I'm very pleased that we are still healthy and going along. And so this month, which is February, which celebrates the 25th year, I'm bringing on guests and sponsors or funders of the program that have been so loyal and supportive of this program. And, of course, the Family Law Section has been for many, many years. All right, Steve, let's do this. It sounds like we're playing games with the name manimony. And are we playing games, or is this something that is really used in at least some of the courts in California?
Well, manimony is a coin or term that I call, and many other people in my field call it, is alimony for men, or spousal support for men. And it's becoming more and more of an emerging trend in family law cases, since we know statistically women in California are earning in sometimes 25 to 26% more than men. So we have women who are higher wage earners. And in California, spousal support for men or manimony is all about equal rights, since our statute is gender neutral.
Why is it? Can you give us an explanation? Why are some women making more money than men?
Well, women and men are both, many of our clients are highly educated and professional people.
Mm-hmm.
I have many clients who are doctors, dentists, entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. founders of new businesses, mm-hmm. and they are emerging women and highly professional in their field. Their husbands may also be employed, but in some instances, they are not making as much as their wife is. And when your parties are getting divorced, you have to look at the economics of their respective earnings. And when you look at their respective earnings, it appears that in many instances, especially here in the Bay Area, where we have a lot of talented and highly educated women, that they are making more mm-hmm. money. And when you get into marriages of either short-term or long-term duration, that is where spousal support will come into play for men.
Would you tell us this? What at least in your clientele, or at least what you know with regard to spousal support for men, what is the estimate of what percentage in divorces of husbands getting spousal support?
Well, we know nationally it's a very small percentage.
Mm-hmm.
There was an article written where I was quoted in the California Lawyer magazine in October. Nationally, it's probably 3 to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
However, in California, it's much greater. My experience has been over the last at least 5 to 6 years, it's averaging about 15 to 20% of our cases that we're handling, and I do believe that it's becoming more of an emerging trend in California, and specifically here in the Bay Area. And I think, Marlis, you've had that experience as well.
That mirrors my experience as well in terms of our practice load, specifically following 9/11 mm-hmm. to present day, seeing an increase in the number of men we evaluate for either underemployment or unemployment.
So how does your job as an evaluator, what essentially do you do, and how does it occur?
So I am usually retained by either both attorneys as a joint expert, or I'm brought in as a court expert, in other words, the judge's expert, or I'm retained by one side, either opposing counsel brings me in to educate, I like to think, to educate the parties and the council and the judge as to someone's employability and wage earning capacity.
And does this mean that you're brought into it by whatever means, whether you're hired by an attorney or appointed by the court, because one of the parties either is underemployed or unemployed? Is that how you get involved?
Yes, there's usually some question as to what someone can earn.
And so why is a vocational evaluator, what are you trying to do to help both, I presume, the court as well as the party with whom you're dealing? What's the point of this, especially in today's financial situation where we have so many people being laid off?
The nuts and bolts of my job are really to provide a fair, accurate, and objective assessment as to someone's earning capacity. But it breaks down really to more than that. In trying to help the individual being evaluated, I always try to come up with a reasonable plan. And reasonable to me is a plan that takes into consideration, and I'm required by family law to take this into consideration, someone's age, background, education, work history, their health, both physical and emotional health. Their interests. Usually we discuss the custody situation, the ages of the children.
Yeah.
And also their interests. And so we look at it from a lot of different perspectives. And in trying to help the person being evaluated, a reasonable plan is something that takes into consideration all those factors. If I'm trying to help the opposing spouse or the supporting spouse, it's really by looking at what's fair and reasonable. What's fair to expect of this person? That's where the current economy comes into play.
What if you have a man who, let's say both parties are working, and let's say the man is laid off, which is not uncommon today.
Unfortunately, no.
Yes. Let's say the man is laid off. Let's say also maybe we have, because things have changed in terms of how a good percentage of men view their role as a father and a husband to spend more time with the kids. So let's say we've got a situation, if you would deal with both of these examples. The man is laid off, so he's not working. He had been working up until a certain point until he was laid off. Let's also take the husband, the father, who sees himself as wanting to spend more time with the kids, and maybe we talk about him as Mr. Mom.
Okay.
So how do you deal with somebody? How do you deal with people like this who have lost? First guy who's lost his job, how do you, I mean, there's one way of evaluating it, but the jobs aren't out there, perhaps.
Steve, do you want to take this from a legal perspective first, and
then
I'll follow up?
I think it's important. Let's say this happens. Let's say both parties were, when the proceedings were filed, both parties were working, and then one person, like the dad, loses his job. And let's say they have a couple children. Well, under the law, a husband who is not working and the parties are splitting and are living in separate abodes, are going to be required to get some support to maintain their some remnants of their marital standard of living. And typically what happens is income and expense declarations are filed, financial information is disclosed, and the court will then compute a presumptive spousal support temporary order. Now, that will take the parties through for a period of time. It could run for 6 months to a year, depending upon all the other issues they have to resolve, custody, financial issues. But then at some point, we will get to the question of permanent support, and that is, or what we call long-term support. And if you have a marriage of more than 10 years, you're looking at a significant spousal support order. But again, what happens here is because we have, in the situation where a husband has lost his job, eventually we're hopeful that he will be employed again, and maybe he will be making the equivalent or similar wage that his wife is, and so that the spouse support issue may not be a big one. However, in a down economy where there's a likelihood there is not going to be as many opportunities despite his good faith efforts, you're going to be looking at significant spousal support for a longer period of time. The rule of thumb in spousal support is that if your marriage is less than 10 years, it's half the length of the marriage. That's the presumption. So if you're married for 5 years, it's 2.5 years, or 6 years, three.
Really?
That's the presumption.
All right.
That's the length of your support. But in longer-term marriages more than 10 years, the court cannot terminate jurisdiction on spousal support and must retain it. And then there's the question of how long that support can run.
So Marlis, when you have a husband, father, who's lost his job, and no fault of his own, and you're brought in either by the court appoints you, or you're hired by one of the attorneys, but presumably by his attorney if he can afford one.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? I mean, what's the point of your being an evaluator if this man in this economy has lost his job and probably the probabilities of him getting a job again are going to be pretty low?
Well, that's a great question. Judges, in my experience, aren't necessarily going to adopt that opinion. What they're going to try to look at in this kind of situation, we'll take the job seeker scenario first. The question is, how long is it going to take this guy to get a job?
Yeah.
And at what capacity is he going to be reemployed?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really when I'm brought in. I mentioned earlier, my job is really, really begins in these kinds of cases when there's a question as to someone's employability.
Mm-hmm.
Steve had mentioned earlier, good faith effort. And that's one of the things that an evaluator is going to take into consideration, is looking at how hard is this person trying to get a job. In the case of a job seeker, Steve and I created a couple hypotheticals for tonight. Let's say we've got someone in their mid-40s, okay, along the same lines that you were talking about, and he's been laid off for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of sat back on his haunches for a little while, hung out with the kids, coached Little League, marital dissolution begins, and all of a sudden he's being forced to look at his job search in a much more serious way. He's been looking for a year, wife starts to get antsy because nothing's happening. All right. Vocational evaluators brought in because everyone's starting to ask questions. And he's saying, I'm doing the best I can do. In this kind of economy, it's not reasonable to expect that I'm going to find employment. Nobody's hiring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I hear every day.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's
mm-hmm.
hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And my job is to really take a look at what he's doing. And I'm going to try to establish for the court his good faith effort. And by doing that, I'm looking at how many strategies, for example, he's employing. A lot of times a common scenario in my office is someone wheeling in one of those big carriages or moving boxes full of job search records. And those records contain almost 100% of online job postings. And they'll sit down in my office and they'll say dishearteningly, I've been applying to jobs online for the last 9 months or in this
so
case.
So you want the documentation, assuming the person has saved it.
I do, and most of the time they have some record of it.
Do they?
Or
okay.
are able to pull up some
but
record
But that's
of
an
it.
Important thing for them to do.
Well, for example, the court, as a result of the issuance of a temporary order, is going to give that party a Gavron warning.
Now you're going to have to define what a Gavron
warning is under the statute is that the court will order that the husband has an obligation to use reasonable good faith efforts to become self-sufficient and to be diligent in securing employment.
Mm-hmm.
And that is given when the court order of temporary support is issued.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, as Marlis is saying, we're rolling the clock down the road a year and a half, and that's where she's going to now really evaluate what he's done.
Right. What he's done.
Or what he hasn't done.
Following, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so in this kind of economy, this job seeker who's been looking for work for a year may in fact have been trying.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they have been applying to these online postings. But the success rate of online job postings is very low.
Yes.
Monster.com is one of the most reputable job search engines, although there are all kinds, Career Builder, Yahoo Jobs, mm-hmm. Indeed.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's varying statistics out there, but on average, about 1.5 to 3.5% success rating in terms of job placement.
Wow. Very low, isn't it?
It's very low.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to incorporate, and this Jason job seeker individual is going to incorporate and the internet into his job search, it's fine. That's good. But really, 12 to 20% of his overall job search time should be on the internet. I'm going to be looking for other activities. And most of that is that dreaded word in the job search world.
Networking.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. Yes. And it is dreaded. I mean, getting a job, finding a job in a good economy is a hard job. Finding a job in today's economy is an even harder job. And the job search efforts that someone might put forth in a stronger economy aren't even the tip of the iceberg mm-hmm. in today's economy.
And what Marlis is saying is the deficiencies that she is discovering in his lack of good faith is the same thing that I will be looking for in terms of trying, if I'm representing the wife now,
sure.
to discredit his good faith efforts and to then request the court to start imputing income against him for a reasonable wage that he should have been earning by now.
But part of the key, I think, in a vocational evaluation, too, is creating a baseline of good faith effort. Mm-hmm. So when that Gavron warning was issued, job seeker was really told to go out and, in many cases, asked to apply to online job postings or asked to apply to the classified ads. Mm-hmm. The courts don't...
Classified in the newspaper?
Yeah. Any,
they still have ads in the newspaper?
They do. Not a lot.
Not a lot.
Not a lot. But they do.
Yeah.
And the courts typically ask for them to apply to a certain amount of jobs per week or per month.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, really?
Okay.
So is that right? Oh, okay.
They aren't saying, I want you out there networking 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. They're saying, apply to a certain amount of jobs mm-hmm. per week and you will be filling your requirement of due diligence. Mm-hmm. But they're going to come to me in a vocation evaluation. I'm going to say, not good enough. It's not good enough. If you need to really get a job and you need to start contributing to the income of your family, these are the kinds of things you're going to need to do.
Marlis, when you are appointed by the court in a situation like this, are you paid by the court or are the parties ordered to pay you?
I am paid by the parties.
By the parties?
By the parties.
Not the court. Okay.
Not the court.
What if you have a situation where a man is laid off, and we're really focusing on the man tonight, not mm-hmm. the woman, because we are talking about manimony. the man is laid off, and the wife is working, and she's got a decent job. She's making some decent income. They've got a couple of young children, and he kind of fits right into the role of being the custodial parent. He's spending a lot of time with the kids, and she's got a lot more freedom now that he's spending more time with the kids. And we have this kind of a situation where
the role reversal situation.
Yeah. So how do you deal with that when the wife, the mother, has been depending on him to spend more time with the kids, and now, unfortunately, for whatever reason, their marriage has broken up mm-hmm. and they're going to get divorced. But he says to the court or says to you, but look at the time, the quality time I'm spending with the child. This is nearly like, the situation of Herman, the homemaker, mm-hmm. not quite the guy who lost his job, but like that. How do you deal with someone like that who can say, well, look at the time I'm spending with the kids. I go pick them up at school. I go to the parent-teacher meetings. I help them with their soccer or their softball or whatever. How do you deal with something like that?
Well, Steve, why don't you address it from a legal perspective and then turn it back to me?
Well, from a legal perspective, I would like to first know what skills and education he has that could transcend to another employment opportunity that might not be as highly compensable as his current or what his former job, but could work within the scheme of providing daycare, or perhaps, let's say he was had math or science background. Well, we do know this, that is an area where, once additional funding is going to be made available, that is an area that will be, those positions will be well sought after, and that there could be some real opportunities there. There was a very famous case, Labasse and Muncy. It's a Los Angeles County case in which exactly the same thing happened. It was a role reversal, sexual role reversal. Wife was a former school teacher, mm-hmm. and she, again, wanted to stay home with the kids, and her husband said, well, hey, the children are much older now. They don't need to have dad around, have you around 24/7.
Have mom around.
Mom 24/7. Yeah. So now why don't you go out and get a job? She says, well, there's nothing available. Well, in the want ads alone, there were probably 40 or 50 job postings from the Los Angeles County School District. Mm-hmm. So she could easily go out and get a job. Now, what I would want to do is to find something there that would be at least worth his skills and abilities, that he could meet those that criteria and be working. Now, he may not be compensated as much as he was before, but nevertheless, he is now contributing. For example, if he was able to get a school position, then he could track basically the same school day that his children could.
8 to 3 or whatever.
Yeah, Marlis, you're aware of those kinds of things, yeah.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that maybe Steve's client wouldn't want to hear is that that's going to take some repositioning for him, too. Mm-hmm. If Mr. Mom is sent to my office and is sent by Steve because he's got this question of, okay, you know, he's been out for a number of years. He's basically been playing the mom role in the house. We need to get him out and working. Marlis, what are you going to say about him? I'm going to say this is a guy who needs some time and probably financial resources to reposition, particularly in the competitive job market. A rule of thumb, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I would probably a more common request a couple of years ago was, well, you know, just send him out to retail. Send dad to Home Depot. Send mom to Macy's and let him go make some money retail.
Macy's is just, what, 4,000 employees or something they're going to lay off or something
like
that.
Home Depot is in the same boat. In fact, retail lost more jobs in the last quarter of 2008 than in all the preceding quarters of the year. Mm. And usually that's the year or the time of year where you see the biggest jump in retail sales because of the holiday season. Yeah. So that isn't a fallback anymore. So we go back to Mr. Mom and we say, listen, hey, he's got to have an objective, a reasonable, probably new career objective. 14 or 15 years out of any job is going to warrant some re-skill, some redevelopment in terms of skills. What Steve's client may not want to hear is, if we're going to look at a math teacher, for example, for someone with a math background, we've got a year or two to get a teaching credential.
Wow.
And then we've got somewhere between $40,000 and $50,000 earning capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but on the other token, we also have a schedule that's more conducive, as you were saying earlier, to parenting responsibilities, which might fit in just fine with the overall family dynamic.
Let me let the listeners know. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about manumony, which is spousal support for husbands. My guests are very experienced in this area. Marla Bruns is a private vocational evaluator. She's either appointed by the court to evaluate the, as she's been talking about, the potential that someone might have for getting back into the job market. She's an expert in court, co-author of something called the Standards of Practice for Vocational Evaluations in California Family Law. It could have been a longer title, but they decided not to. My other guest is Steve Rubin. He's a member of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. He's also a certified specialist in family law. And for those of you who listen to the program for the full hour, whether it's in the Bay Area or on the Internet at www.klw.org, we will, in the next half hour, which will be a few minutes from now, be taking your calls. And we won't just restrict it to manumony. We'll expand beyond that if you like. So, all right. So here we have the situation where you've described to us a couple of scenarios, one for someone who's lost his job, another person who's Mr. Mom who wanted to be with the kids. Well, what about the wife? What about the mother in a situation where, okay, this man may not be that employable? You gave the example of someone who's going to be a teacher. It may take a couple of years to get the teaching credentials. So the mom who's working is going to have to pay spousal support for him. It may also be that he has perhaps the greater time with the children because of his availability. How are women, in your experience, Marlis, how are women reacting to this where the dad gets more time with the kids? Although the wife has more freedom, what's going on? What's the reaction have you seen? Are they happy with this? Are the women happy to have more free time?
I think women are, moms in general, are still unwilling to relinquish their role as parent. even though they technically can go to the grocery store unencumbered, even though they may have more freedom to pursue their careers, I think a lot of times women are still looking to play that primary role. So it's I see, and Steve, I don't know if you agree, but there's a definite push and pull in our society.
So how does the court deal with something like this? If for example, the Mr. Mom really has more time to be with the kids, and let's say, and he's also going to be paid spousal support, and there will also be child support.
Correct.
And so he's primarily taking care of the kids, and it may be as much as 60%, 70%, or whatever it is, leaving the mom 20, 30%, or 40%, whatever it is. How are the courts dealing with this in terms of allocating what the custody of the children will be time-wise? Steve?
Well, again, I think that we have to look at the historical perspective of the family unit. If mom was taking care of the children and holding down a full-time position, it's more likely that the court is going to retain the status quo.
The same status. So if she was spending 50% of the time with the kids as he was, it'll stay the same.
Well, because the courts want to create a stability for the children. It's in their best interest. However, you could have a huge shift if again, where the father who may have been employed has lost his job and by default now has to pick up that more of that custodial role. Mm-hmm. It may not be by design, but it happens. And then, of course, that may change the dynamics of the custodial relationship. One thing that I have found in family law proceedings is that where mom has been the primary caretaker and really responsible for the children, dads try to assert their custody rights to an attempt to get better to try to get more access for their children, but also to avoid some or to minimize their child support obligations. But in this case, where dad lost his job and is really by default taking on that responsibility, and that's been going on for quite a while, the court will maintain, in all likelihood, the status quo, again, because the children have adjusted to that. Now, eventually, things could get better, you know.
All right. It's about a little bit more than 2 minutes before 8 o'clock at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a family law program tonight. We're celebrating the 25th year of Your Legal Rights, most of which has been at KALW. And the topic tonight is manumony, spousal support for husbands. We will expand if you have questions in just plain simple alimony or child support or custody or whatever you want to talk about. Or we don't have any reason for talking about adultery anymore. That's not the law. Although you may want to talk about it, but it's
makes
not...
Makes for interesting conversation.
It would make it, yeah. We'll raise the ratings of the program if we talk about adultery. But in any event, if you'd like to join us with your questions, your comments, your concerns in the area of family law, please do so. It's 1-415-841-4134. That's 1-415-841-4134. And, of course, the children are such a major part of the whole scheme of trying to work out something between the parents that this is very important. All right, my guests are Stephen Rubin. He's a member of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. He's a specialist in family law certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and his law offices are in San Francisco. My other guest is Marlis Bruns. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Bruns?
Bruns.
Bruns. All right, good. I got it right.
Yes, you're doing just fine. That's
okay. A private vocational evaluator. She's a partner in the vocational consulting firm of Stevenson and Bruns in San Ramon. She testifies in court as an expert in family law matters as a vocational evaluator. And she's the co-author of the Standards of Practice for Vocational Evaluations in California Family Law. And where can someone find that if someone is in a situation that he or she wants to educate him or herself about this? It would seem to me it would be a worthwhile thing to take a look at. Or is it something that you design primarily for the court and lawyers?
Well, it was designed primarily for the court and for lawyers, but I think, is the statistic 70% are pro-per? I think it's an excellent resource for people that are going through this process unrepresented, and it can be found on my website, which is www.stevensonbruns.com.
Let me spell that out for the people right now, if you would like. Stevenson Bruns, Bruns,
yes.
.com. All right.
And then also www.BayAreaVocationalExperts.net.
Okay, BayAreaVocationalExperts.net.
Yes.
Okay, all right. All right, so let's do this. Let's start with Tess. Tess, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a partner. My partner has been the primary child care giver for his children. The way he and his ex-wife used to work it out was that he pretty much had them all day, and then she would work from 5 a.m. till about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and then he would go to work. He owns his own business, and he'd work from 3 o'clock till 9. My question is that when they divorced, he was trying to explain to the judge and his lawyer how much time he spent with his kids during the day, like over summer vacations, and, you know, he'd pick them up from school, and he'd be there when they were sick, and all those things, right, like a you know, Mr. Mom. But ultimately, what the court proceeding boiled down to was not how much time he spent with them all summer long. He's in charge of them during the day. It was just, where are they sleeping at night?
Mm.
And I just wanted to get your
take
on it.
That's interesting. That's interesting. What county did his case come in?
Alameda County.
It was Alameda County.
And so he was incredibly frustrated because when he looked at the hours, he broke it down by hours that he was with the children. It was like, well, where do they sleep? And so he ended up with 30% custody, and his ex got 70. And, you know, right now she's wanting to bring him back to court again.
She wants more time than 70%?
Not more time. She wants more support.
Oh, she
wants. She actually wants to expand her work hours right now,
mm-hmm.
and she wants to work more and wants more money to pay for childcare. And he's like, "Well, I'm well anyway." but he's, you know, I guess he was just sort of, he's thinking about now asking to have more child. He'd like to take the children at night now. They've been, I mean, what you were saying about the status quo, they also spend a lot of time with him in the evening.
I see. And then they go home and to their mother's home to sleep?
They usually go to their mom's house to sleep. But he's wondering if he should just ask the court to come pick him up at 9 o'clock every night, because he gets them to school in the morning, as it is.
He takes them to school still in the morning?
Yeah.
Our mom seems to have a pretty good situation here.
Well, the mom's got a real good deal. Let's do this, Tess. I think you can turn your radio back up and listen to my guests respond to this.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for calling. Let me just mention one thing that's important for everyone to know. Because of time limitations and because of the state bar's ethics rules, when someone calls in and asks for specific legal advice, my guests can't give that, shouldn't give it, and we try not to do it on the program. But what we try to do is more generally respond to the question to try to give you some direction. So with that in mind, Steve, would you, I mean, it's apparent that Tess's partner's former wife is getting an awfully good deal here.
Yes.
Sounds like to me.
Absolutely.
She's got a real good deal, and she's working too.
It may be because of the work hours, the unusual work relationships that they have that creates that kind of unusual dynamic, because people, you know, generally work during the day, not this night shift. But the court has a great deal of discretion in crafting a parenting plan. And in terms of, there are many times where when we approach the case, we do look not only the traditional ways, where are they sleeping at night, but I tend to be pushing for hours spent with children in terms of time percentages. And when children are sleeping at night, they're not interacting with anybody. They are sleeping. It's where you're spending the quality time of parenting that really comes more into play. So that's the issue that I would like to focus is what is dad's role? What is he actually actively doing with the child rather than where the child sleeps? I have a real difficult time with that concept of sleeping counts is the primary factor in determining percentages of time in custody.
So any suggestions for him as to how I should have asked Tess if her partner had an attorney. I presume he does.
Well, not likely.
You think not?
Well, because 70, as Marlis and I know, that 70% of people are unrepresented.
Yeah.
One thing that I know that is very powerful in presenting cases is having written evidence, maintaining a diary, showing the court the activities that dad is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps he didn't do that.
Yeah.
Just testifying that, they spend these times and what. I think what is more graphic and what is more more powerful is the state. I took my son to the doctors. I took him for this. I went to.
Would you write it in
yes,
kind of like
and,
a...
Yes, and we tell our clients to maintain a calendar and writing things down in a log because that's a piece of written evidence. And that's
so you would introduce that into evidence,
absolutely,
I presume.
Absolutely.
Really? That's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there you are, Tess. I hope your partner was listening. If he's working again tonight in his schedule of, 3 to 9 p.m., tell him what we've discussed, and hopefully it may be of some help. Do you have any thoughts for him, either, Marlis?
I don't. Okay. Specifically, I think this would fall definitely more in Steve's area.
All right. Well, we're going to keep moving then with some other questions. Maria, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Are you there, Maria?
Yes, I am.
Well, hi. You're on the air.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
My question is a little two-parter, and I know you said you didn't want to talk about the adultery thing, but...
you want to increase the ratings of this program, I can see. You're a real lover of Your Legal Rights. But go ahead, Maria. Go ahead.
Okay, this might really help then, because I separated from my ex-husband because he was having affairs with men.
I see.
And, yes, and but before that, he had started his business, which is an art gallery. And at the time, I was also working full-time as an administrative assistant, and we had three children. And I pretty much was the mom at home and had the full-time while he grew his business and had to do all those evening events related to a gallery. And so when we broke up, I was the one that left because it became a little on the violent side. Mm. And so what I'm wondering is, we are sharing custody of the children, half and half. That's not so much the issue as it is how do we divvy up the money and the property and things like that. There is we own a home together, but I had to essentially flee the home, and the children are living there with him, and they come and stay with me every weekend and some days of the week at my mother's, where I had to go.
So you're in the process of getting a divorce. Is that it?
Yes.
You
We're
are.
Both. Yeah, we okay. both haven't talked to lawyers.
You
yet.
Have not.
We have not.
Yeah.
Right now, I've just picked up sort of the pieces of my life and trying to move on. And one thing I have done is I quit my job recently. Because they were going to let me go anyway, and I decided to pursue my dreams, just like I supported him when he pursued his dream to be a dealer. So I am not working. I am living off my savings as I'm trying, you know, to do what I want to do in my life. So I'm curious to know what are my responsibilities, what are his responsibilities, in terms of, you know, supporting the children financially.
All right. This is a real packed question. No question about
it.
Maria, turn your radio back up. I'm glad you called because I'm sure a lot of other people are in the same boat that you are at this point. Steve, what comments do you have for her?
Well, it sounds like there's no legal proceedings that have been filed, and I think the sooner you get those underway, the better off, because then you'll start getting control over your finances and solidifying the custodial arrangements and support arrangements that you need to attend to. As long as there is no court proceeding, unless you and your husband can agree to sell the home, there's not much you can do. I assume that you both own the property together. So that's one of the dilemmas. And we're also in a very down economy, and whether you should sell is another thing that comes into play. Couple things. If you worked out a custodial arrangement, that's great. That needs to be solidified in a court order. And once you figure out what your custody arrangements are, then you will start to figure out what the support obligations are going to be. Now, you indicated that you are not working and you want to pursue your dream job. That may have some implications as it relates to child support and or spouse support. And Marlis, I think you should step in on that one.
Yeah, I'm cringing a little bit here only because you're in a tough situation, or this is a tough situation, in terms of wanting to pursue a dream. Mm-hmm. And while I can understand that, and in many situations, it's appropriate to go and pursue that, and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the middle or the beginning of a dissolution is a difficult time to do that. I don't know what the family situation is in terms of finances, but self-employment, pursuit of a dream can be a really rocky road.
The way she was talking, it sounds like she wants to do this. I mean, she said she was going to be laid off her job anyway. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like she is hoping that she can get a spousal support award from the court, giving her the opportunity to follow her dream.
And in my experience, judges are more apt to look at what someone was previously doing in terms of looking at their ability to earn or ability to pay, rather than giving them the, in many cases, the luxury of pursuing a dream.
So even though, as she said, she helped her husband while he pursued the role of the owner of a gallery, and apparently she made some sacrifices to support him in doing that. That is not something, in your experience, Marlis, that a court is going to take into consideration, say, well, because you did this for your husband now, the court's going to order that your husband is going to do this for you?
A lot of it depends on what that is.
Okay. All right.
It depends on what it is. But right. But from the way she's talking, it sounds like what you're looking for here is that opportunity. He got this, so I want that.
Yeah.
There's another point. I mean, the fact is that when you dissolve the marriage, and let's assume this is a successful art gallery, then she's going to have a community property interest
in
that gallery as well.
So of course she is.
Yeah, so that, you know, she will get the benefit of his efforts somewhere down the road.
And the court's going to certainly look at that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, what should they, you said, Steve, you shouldn't put off moving ahead and filing your dissolution of marriage. Now, she's not working. At this point, if she hires an attorney, can she count on, at this point, without having a job, that the court would award her attorney's fees against the husband?
Well, he, at this point, is working and she is not.
That's right.
He's in the financial ability to pay that.
Yeah.
Attorney's fees, where she has nothing at this point. But the fact is, she indicated that she quit. And that hurts her big time.
Yes.
Had she been fired, that would have changed the dynamics.
Despite her report that she was going to be laid off anyway,
mm-hmm.
you know that it's
that would be important if she could provide written evidence that the layoffs were pending. Then I think that mitigates the damage.
And
she probably would get awarded some attorney.
Well, Maria, you have a job to do. It's not a simple thing to do. There also is, I don't know what experience, Steve, you have had with the Family Court Facilitator's Office, which is throughout the state, where they help you fill out papers, et cetera, et cetera. It's not lend a lawyer type of thing, unfortunately, but you will deal with a lawyer or at least someone who's an assistant trained to some extent in the law and helping you fill out the papers, but it's not a substitute for having your own lawyer.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But they do a very, very competent job.
Yeah.
I'm aware of, Kristen Hoadley, who runs the Family Law Facilitators Office at the Superior Court in San Francisco, does an extraordinary good job, and San Mateo and all the other counties do really do help people a great deal.
It may be, Maria, at this point, and I didn't ask you what county you're in, it may be that you want to go to the family law facilitator's office and at least start educating yourself on what's available to you, what papers you might want to consider and doing that. And also, I want to mention something to you, which is very important. If you have a legal problem, not just from the family law standpoint, but you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And for a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KLW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service, and you can call that one at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in neither of those counties, you can call your own during normal business hours. They'll find someone for you. You tell them what the problem is. They'll find someone for you who's experienced, and they'll set up a half-an-hour consultation. Depending on what county you're in, it may be a low of $25 or a high of $35 for a half-an-hour consultation. That's another way of at least getting a chance to see what you're facing. Not much can be accomplished in half an hour, but it's better than nothing, and it's something to try, Maria. All right, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are Marlis Bruns, who's a vocational consulting evaluator. My other guest is Steve Rubin, a member of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. And we've got, Julie. Julie, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hello. My case, I think, is rather unusual. I'm glad you're going to take it. I'm 65, and I've been married for about 26 years, and my husband and I want to get divorced. He's a bit younger, 59. Mm. I was a breadwinner for most of the years together. We're both painters, but I had to teach school to support us.
When you say painters, you mean portrait painters?
Artists like...
Artists, yeah, okay. All right, not house painters.
No.
Okay, all right.
And I was able to retire early when I was 55 because I felt that I knew that I was going to inherit some money and when my parents passed away. And also my husband had finally gotten a job. We'd already been married, I guess, about 20 years then. So I took early retirement, and then he lost his job within about 4 or 5 years. And so now we want to divorce. He would only get, I'm quite in agreement to give him half of my pension, which is going to be very small because I took this early retirement. And then just when now we are getting separated, I came into my inheritance, which is quite a bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, I suppose I will have to pay some spousal support, but... he's going to get half my pension for the rest of his life. I'm quite in agreement for that, but it's very small. It's only about $700 a month.
Your total pension is $700 a month?
Well, no.
That's half. Okay. All right. $1,400 a month.
Right.
All right. Gotcha.
Right. And I'm going to have plenty of money. But it is my inheritance. There was nothing of this left to him. We do have savings because we own something together.
Well, let's do this, Julie. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. Give me really succinctly the question that you'd like to pose to my guest.
So my question is if he doesn't find work, will I be expected to pay spousal support for the rest of his life? And is it going to have to be, really enough for him to live on, which is...
In other words, is your good fortune of your inheritance going to be a part of what happens in terms of spousal support for your husband?
Well,
is that right?
How much of a part? I mean,
yeah. Okay, gotcha. All right. Well, let me get my guests to respond to some degree, but you certainly need to see a lawyer about this. You know that.
Yes, I do.
You know that.
Yes.
So your husband hasn't found a little honey, huh?
He hasn't what?
He hasn't found a little honey.
Yes, he has.
Is that it?
Yes.
Oh, so he's got a little honey on the side.
He asked for the divorce.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Bad timing on his part.
Oh, my. Well, turn the radio back on. Nice to hear from you. Sorry to hear about this. Steve, what comments do you have for Julie?
Well, there's quite a bit. This is a very rich case. And there's a lot of interesting issues. But let me talk about the first, which is your inheritance. And you probably know this if you haven't already, is your inheritance is your sole and separate property. And it, obviously, it's not going to come into the equation as to the community property division. However, it will come into the equation in terms of support because when you inherit this funds, the court is going to imply a reasonable rate of return on your inheritance. However, the question is this liquidable assets or are these real estate assets? I mean, all those things have to come into play. Okay, so you have a reasonable rate of return will be imputed and applied as part of the considerations of spouse support. But on the other side of the equation is the marital standard of living that you lived during your life. And so your inheritance should not be a windfall for your husband. That is to say, you lived a lifestyle within your means, and I can't imagine it was a very opulent lifestyle, mm-hmm. being painters. Therefore, we have to look at the standard of living during the period of time that you were living together. And that would be the benchmark of how you would craft a spouse support award. Now, you would look at it probably from a temporary standpoint, the cash flow and income that you're receiving. But on the other side, you still have, your husband is only 59 years old.
55, I think, right?
No, I think she said, no, 59.
59? Okay,
yeah,
and then
Marla,
that becomes an issue because mm-hmm. he still is employable,
yeah.
and now comes the vocational evaluator.
Well, he'd be in a little better position if he was 55, like I had heard. but at 59, the court is still going to consider him employable with mm-hmm. retirement age at mm-hmm. 66 now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know what he did, what he was laid off from, so it's yeah. difficult for me to say. But, Julie, you had said, if he doesn't find work, then what are my responsibilities?
Sure.
That's really the question, because there's two ways that can go. Is one, he can look for work and not find it. Okay,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or he cannot look for work and not find it.
Yes,
and Steve's job or an attorney's job would be, you know, or the attorney representing you, Julie, would be, okay, is he looking? And has he looked, and where would he looked, and mm-hmm. what could he make if he was looking?
Yes.
So that the judge could impute income to mm-hmm. him, even if he hasn't found work,
mm-hmm.
if you can prove that he hasn't tried, that he hasn't exhibited the good faith effort necessary.
Could you tell us this? In that she's 65, he's 59, mm-hmm. and they've been married 26 years, and one of her questions was, Josh, am I going to have to support him for the rest of his life?
Well, that's an interesting wish.
Yeah, and here we are. He's 59. He's maybe employable. A lot of people think of 65 as a retirement age, irrespective of Julie retiring mm-hmm. at 55. That's what she told us. What comments do you have for her in that respect?
Well, the age of retirement is getting
longer and longer.
Longer,
yeah.
longer and longer.
Yeah, I mean,
in
I
fact,
think it's close to 70 now.
It is 70.
Or 71
and so,
or whatever.
And there's, it's a kind of a double-edged sword you have. Julie has decided that she's retiring at 55. So now she can...
And she's been retired for 10 years.
Right. So that's a long period of time. The question is, okay, she's retiring, but her husband, who is unemployed now, will not be retiring.
And still has some remaining work life.
And one could make the same argument that she does,
mm-hmm.
remaining work. But on her case, there's the Reynolds case, which talks about the fact that at a certain age, and Dr. Reynolds, who was a medical director at the La Jolla Medical Center and Spa, was able to retire at the age of 65. That was the retirement
mm-hmm.
age.
Mm-hmm.
However, that didn't terminate his spousal support obligation. It would be based upon his, again, retained asset asset base and the reasonable rate of return on his assets. In this case, we have a pension, which is important. Julie would be getting Social Security eventually.
In addition to the pension.
Right, exactly. But she would probably might consider waiting till 70 or 71
before she draws on
the full amount,
yeah.
and the better benefit.
Mm-hmm.
On his side, he's not going to even look at Social Security until
apparently
at
not.
Least. Yeah. So yeah. That's the kind of dilemma that you have. He's going to be eventually imputed perhaps a reasonable wage earning, but at
so the, she's got but she so she has some because of the length of the marriage some potential there for
long-term.
Long
term. Yep,
support.
Because a marriage it's they've been married a long period of time. Yeah. 25 years, 10 years is a marriage of in this world significant duration.
Yeah, it is, right.
I find that quite humorous.
Well, she's had the two and a half times that significant and it ends up like this. Julie, good luck to you, but you really need to see an attorney. I know you know that. Let's take one more very brief call. Michelle, welcome to the program. I'm sorry we get you at the end. Oh, she's gone. All right, she's gone. Any other comments then for Julie, which is one of these situations that is not that terribly unusual with a long, long-term marriage where kaboom, off it goes. Any other comments for her?
Well, again, I think the key part for her attorney to emphasize is the standard of living that they enjoyed during the marriage. So, who knows how much money she's inherited.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to look at how they lived. What were their expenses? And I know, Marlis, you're aware of, when you take a look at a budget of a family unit, how much money they're being spent, what is being spent, and what we reasonably expected to be earned, could that person be self-sufficient? And those are the kinds of issues that you would be looking at. And that's the same kind of issue that the court would be mm-hmm. looking at is, okay, mm-hmm. how did these people make it? Comments?
Well, the self-sufficiency question is interesting in our area, where it's highly affluent, and our level of incomes and what's normal is typically a lot higher than you find in other areas. I think their level of marital standard probably is, as you mentioned, lower than many, because they're painters and we don't reward our artists as we should. But I think that's going to come into play depending on where he was working and where he was laid off from and what that market looks like now.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for joining us on the program. Steve Rubin, member of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar, thank you very much for suggesting doing this.
It's my pleasure.
Glad to have you here. And Marlis Bruns, thank you very much for
joining us.
Thanks
for having me.
And telling us about the role of the vocational consultant. It's very interesting and obviously very valuable.
Thank you.
Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, which has actually been funding the program, I think, at least 17 or 18 years, something like that. A long, long time. As long as I think any other section of the State Bar or the Board of Legal Specializations. Additional funding is provided by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. We are celebrating our 25th year on the air. That is Your Legal Rights. Join us next week when we're going to be talking about an update of workers' compensation laws and issues. My guests will be Lester Friedman, Chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and Alice O'Sullivan, immediate past Chair of the Board of Legal Specialization, and they're both certified specialists in workers' compensation law. Hope you join us then. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Chuck Finney.